Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Steve Pavlik. Steve, how are we doing this week, my friend?
I'm trying to keep my head above water with all the news with the roster management and Coach Allen leaving. So no shortage of headlines here in what's supposed to be the offseason.
There is no offseason anymore in college football. And it's amazing just how much news. Now, it's like the big news cycle comes right after the season, because you have the portal, you have the coaching carousel, just so much going on. And as you pointed out, at Penn State, that's going on. I think what's interesting, first of all, is Penn State never gets slaughtered, though, by the transfer portal. You see other teams and it's like 20, 25, 30 guys entering the portal. Just not the case at Penn State, Steve.
No, I mean, it's critical as I am of James Franklin. I think he does a good job of sort of creating a culture and trying to recruit guys that fit it. We could talk about maybe this model here for NIL. To me, it's very reminiscent of the Michigan model, where you saw them, you know, have a successful season, invest a lot to reward people who are performing, people who have bought into this culture, this idea that you come back. To me, that makes sense. You know, imitation's the highest form of flattery. So I don't, as much as I don't like Michigan, mind that we're trying to employ that. And I'll give Franklin some credit there. The only thing I'll say is, you said, you know, now the headlines all come after the season. They actually came during the season. When you go to the postseason, that's when Prabula left and others. So that'd be my one minor nit there for you in terms of, you know, because of that situation, we're still going to have to deal with that.
Yeah, and there's, I don't know how much you read about it, that some groups have gotten together there where they talk about potential new rules, and one of them was to hold the portal off until January, when either the playoffs are done, or at least they're much closer to done, and the bowl games are over. There's a lot of logic to it. The other part to the argument is the academic side. and you laugh about that. There are a few of them that still care about it, but it's more about, even if you're not caring about the actual academics, it's about getting registered for the semester so you can be part of spring practice.
Right. That was my question. I guess why I'm also laughing is, how practical is that? I mean, I get that these guys want to transfer and be a part of spring practice, and that way they can sort of evaluate where they are on the roster. Do they stay or do they have to transfer out again? So, you know, I'm not sure there's a great answer other than maybe accelerating everything to just end on New Year's Day. But I don't know, people at some point, hopefully the current system's unsustainable, so they're going to have to be some adjustments at some point.
Well, I think the thoughts, and we've talked about this a little bit, of moving the season up a bit, you know, that week zero where there's just a handful of games, play the actual start of the season, make that week one. Do they really need two byes during the season? There's also the talk of, do you eliminate conference championship games or not? I know some people look at, well, that will never happen because of the money involved. I feel like, you know what, get rid of those, but maybe expand the playoffs from, I know they talk 12 to 14, but if you're going to go to 14, why don't you just go to 16? It's a little math thing going on there. It works out better at 16, Steve.
I don't disagree. And you can talk about getting rid of these buys. But I mean, I guess we're sort of where we begin, though. I mean, talk about the money situation. This is an example, I think, where Penn State, using a very similar model to Michigan, trying to keep a lot of these players here. I think it's advantageous for them. You know, guaranteed money, I think that's really important. If you're not going to be your first or second round pick, that comes with a lot more upside on the financial side. It also means you're likely to get a roster spot. I think anything from third round, particularly below, you're not guaranteed to make a roster. So you're not guaranteed to make that money. And so I think that's becoming now an important calculation for these players trying to figure out, do I come back? Do I not? This is guaranteed money. And I think that's going a long way to keeping some of these guys here a little bit longer. And I think that's probably a good thing. I think the NFL is going to benefit because they'll probably get some more mature products on the field. Some of these guys come out, they're just not NFL ready. So I think, you know, if you're a fan of the NFL, that should probably be better in terms of getting more finished products ready to play. And I'm excited about next season. A lot of these people coming back were sort of, I think, borderline, had that decision to make. I'm glad they made the decision that I think is right, at least from the Penn State fan perspective. Hope it's the right decision for these players coming back too. And is it going to create expectations now heading into next year? You know, this was a team that made it to the semifinals, arguably should have won the semifinals and playing in the championship game. When you have the nucleus coming back, obviously you lose a couple of big players there with Tyler Warren and Abdul Carter, but the fact so many of these people coming back, particularly the offensive line, I think they're going to be high expectations. I've mentioned before, the key to happiness is low expectations, and sort of how do you manage all this in the off season, and just sort of that added pressure of, you know, decent high expectations. I think that's going to be something that the only other time I can think under Franklin may have been comparable was heading into 2017, that year. So a lot to think about.
Yeah, there really is. And well, let's talk about that. As far as the NFL goes, I think it does help them in that the players, by being around in college football a little bit longer, they also create a more of a following so that when they go to the NFL, that will be part of it. I think there's also what has gone on over the last couple of years is this change. I'll talk about the quarterback position specifically because we're going to talk about Drew Aller. And players like Bo Nix might be the poster child for sticking around in college. And the success he's having now in the NFL, I think you can relate it to. This is I'm trying not to use the word veteran, okay? But he was a veteran college player with a lot of starts under his belt. So I think he went to the NFL a lot more ready for it as a rookie. And you compare that to, say, if Drew Aller had come out this year, he would have been coming out as like a 20-year-old or 21 versus some of these guys. They're like 24, 25 years old, Steve, hitting the NFL.
I don't even think you have to go as far as looking at Bo Nix. I think you just look at Tyler Warren. Here's a guy that, you know, maybe had been potentially one of these third or fourth round picks had he come out last year. Comes back. It's going to make a lot more money. Probably a first round pick. Maybe even be a top first round pick. That's generational money. And I think that resonates to these people in the locker room. And to this message that Franklin's trying to say is, look at Tyler Warren. This was a guy who was a quarterback, came here, put his time in, came back this extra year, and this is success at the football level. First round draft pick, a lot of money that comes with it, probably a lot more endorsement money that comes with that too. So my guess is that probably resonated even more with some of those guys in that locker room with them.
Well, Tyler Warren is a good example, and I'm glad you brought him up. Well, first of all, you said probably a first round pick. No, definitely a first round pick, because I folks know I'm an Eagles fan. My great hope was he would still be around for the Eagles. Ain't happening, Steve. Ain't happening.
Let's say trade up.
Well, you know.
I'm just saying, possible versus probable. This is what I deal with for work. But yeah.
But yes, and that he's a good example where maybe a few years ago before NIL, here were his choices. Come back that extra year and make zero money versus the opportunity to make money in the NFL. Now, because of NFL, it's come back. Now, in that previous situation, you come back betting on yourself improving and improving your draft status, but it was a gamble. Now, it's a lot less of a gamble to be able to come back because he could still make money. He could improve his draft status, and everything goes well. And I think for some of these guys too, playing in college football, I've talked to some people who played in the NFL, and they said, you know what? College is the last that it's ever fun. It becomes a job when you go to the NFL.
Yeah, I was just going to say, obviously, I didn't play in the NFL. I didn't play major college football either. But everybody that I've played with in high school that has gone on to the NFL says the same thing. It's a job. And college, it's demanding, but it's not quite at that job experience. Not to mention you're getting free, accommodations there in terms of housing and food. So that's like all cash. So you start factoring that in, you know, that's not insignificant.
And I know earlier when I mentioned academics, you laughed a little bit. And I think for every player, they're going into college football, their dream is to play on Sundays. That's pretty much every one of them, or 99% of them. The fact is, though, it's a small percentage that plays on Sundays. And yeah, that the education and the networking that you do in college really matters. So yeah, can you get your degree in 3 years? Sure. How about getting an advanced degree by sticking around that one more year? There's a lot of wins that come with this. So now you have the situation at Penn State where, Steve, it does seem pretty obvious that there's a strategy there, and that strategy is not so much to go out and get other talent. Our strategy is we're going to retain our talent.
Well, proven talent. I think that's the important thing. It's what are the incentives here? Okay. You can go out and spend a lot of money to try to entice these guys to come to your school. A lot of them probably aren't going to work out. Then you create that dissension within the team. You're paying how much for some guy that's never played here? I've been busting my chops. Like, thanks, but no thanks. I also have the transfer portal option. So again, I specifically referenced the Michigan model because it was, you know, hey, if you come here, you work hard and you contribute, you're going to be rewarded. And that sort of sets the tone. We talked about Franklin recruiting people to this culture that want to buy into it. And I think part of that too is, you know, if you come here and you contribute, there's sort of a literally now a pot of gold here at the end of the rainbow for you. And I think that's important because you have to be judicious here with how you spend the money. You contrast that with some of these SEC programs that's all about, you know, how much money can we lure the big recruit in here? And not surprisingly, a lot of the veterans say, you know, hey, I wasn't making that kind of money. I'm not sticking around. And a lot of these high recruits don't pan out. I mean, we've seen it happen here at Penn State. I mean, look, the guy's leaving now. I don't mean to dunk on him, but like Julian Fleming, at the time, he was one of the prized wide receivers. I mean, clearly his production at the college level didn't match, I think, the hype around his recruitment. But imagine if you'd spent all this money on that and how little return on investment you would have received. So I think this is a smarter approach.
I do too. It's much more efficient. And it's interesting that you brought up the Southeast Conference because that's where we're seeing more of the extremes, you know, the Texas A&Ms, the Ole Misses, the teams that seem to be spending a lot of money to bring in outside talent. And if you just look at the SEC, I don't know if this is a trend that we're going to see over the next several years, but this was not a great year for the Southeast Conference. I think, you know, the Big Ten was more successful this year. You base that probably any way you base it. It was the situation, no matter how you measured it. All right, Steve, that's it for quarter number one. When we get back, we're going to start talking about some individual players coming back. Stay tuned. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Steve Pavlik. It's quarter number two of our show. And Steve, as promised at the end of quarter one, I want to talk about some of the individual players on Penn State who've made their decisions. Many of them, if not most of them, seem to be coming back, which is great news. A veteran team, a team that made it to the Final Four and the semifinals of the college football playoffs. And it's interesting because this isn't the first time you've done this. You occasionally will send me an email and it's the thoughts from your father. Okay. And I love this. What, you know what? One of these days, Steve, we're going to have to get your dad on the show.
I think you would like that. You'd have a tough time limiting him to the time segment. He has a very strong opinion.
Gene, I wonder where you got that from, huh?
But I'm the optimist of the two.
The fact is, yes, you are. So, Dad Pavlik, I'm sorry if we're putting out information you didn't want out. But it's fun and it's interesting because his perspective is that the same as a lot of Penn State fans. And it was interesting in the most recent email that you forwarded on to me, the conversation was about Drew Aller and about him coming back. And it essentially your dad asked the question, is that a good thing or not that Drew Aller is coming back? And he brings up some valid points. And I think one of them is, you know, Drew Aller isn't the most mobile quarterback. He's not, you know, Trace McSorley. He's not, it's a different style. And I think that that is part of the conversation is a question of style.
It is. And I think it goes back to, you know, you talk about what kind of program do you want to be and sort of what are you recruiting to that vision? And that's where I was a little surprised that, you know, Franklin, we saw sort of, you think about where his tenure began with Christian Hackenberg, somebody that wasn't recruited by Franklin, somebody obviously recruited by Bill O'Brien. And we talk about sort of this square peg round hole. And at this point where we play now in college football, you are limited without having a mobile quarterback. You just are. So it was sort of surprising that knowing this and that Franklin's sort of desire and the guys that he'd been recruiting prior to Aller, that he would go towards a more pro style quarterback, which is a polite way of saying a guy who's not really that mobile, not really a dual threat. So that does sort of, you know, beg the question, how did you end up sort of pursuing a guy like this? Was it a Franklin thing? Was it a Mike Yurcich thing? Because I believe Yurcich was the one that was really involved with that. Obviously, Franklin was the one responsible for bringing Yurcich on. So I think that's a valid question. You know, why did we end up with a quarterback of this style? And then look, up until the playoffs, you know, the Oregon game, I know Aller had a couple bad throws. You wouldn't be questioning, is this guy going to be an asset or a liability? It was sort of like, hey, if this guy takes Penn State all the way or to the championship and plays well, is he still going to leave? And I think I mentioned this the last show. It's not just the Notre Dame game. It's not just that final throw. Aller did not play well in the playoffs. He had a handful of throws against Boise State. So you get into this question of consistency, which is really important in the NFL. And I think we talked too about, you know, this unfortunate narrative that's right now being reinforced because you have to have facts to counter it, which would mean winning these big games. Aller has not played well in these big games. And it's that those big games usually come with guys that you're probably going to see on Sunday. And so that could cause some reservation there for these NFL scouts. So yeah, I sort of look at it as, you know, I remember some quarterbacks, you know, you referenced 82, Todd Blackledge coming back, Kerry Collins, you know, coming back in 94, times where Penn State had a good quarterback, NFL caliber quarterback, and they went on and had some success, you know, and more closer to my immediate era is probably Hackenberg and Anthony Morelli. These were guys that were pro style guys, never really materialized that success, or that success really never materialized itself at the collegiate level. And so I'm sort of left wondering heading into the season, you know, which direction is Aller going to be? And people might have strong opinions one way or the other. The bottom line is we don't know.
You're right. We don't. And I think there's an inherent risk in the quarterbacks that you mentioned, Morelli, Hackenberg. They were the guys who have the measurables. Big, strong guys with a big arm, you know, as part of it. And those are the guys who ultimately in the NFL, that physical type.
Yeah, those attributes. One. Yeah.
Yes, those attributes. And, you know, I'll bring up, and I'm going to bring them up in for a couple reasons. Josh Allen in the NFL, who's now, you know, considered one of the very best players. But when he came out, he came from a smaller school. He had those physical attributes, but was he going to be a good NFL quarterback? And even at that point at the NFL level, we've seen plenty of NFL quarterbacks getting drafted very highly. You know, it's an inexact science, but I think some of those things I always say, you can't teach 6'5", 245 with a monster arm. That you can't teach. Okay. And those are the things, the guys that we brought up, they have those attributes. Now, where I think with Drew Aller, what I like about him is his mobility improved quite a bit from the 23 season to the 24 season. It's something he worked on. He lost some weight, got himself quicker, and it showed. I'm of the argument that more important than him being physically quicker, I felt his decision-making, like when he's back in the pocket, when it's time to escape the pocket, I felt like in 23, you could count an extra beat before he would make that decision, Steve. Now he seems to be doing it on time and getting out quicker. And he got himself a lot of first downs with his feet.
He did. He still strikes me as a very awkward runner. This doesn't really come natural to him. Contrast that with somebody like Trace McSorley, who, I mean, objectively, the guy was like a 2 or 3 star safety. Didn't really have the physical attributes we talked about being a big time quarterback, but he just sort of had that it factor, that confidence. You know, it's a guy, hey, I'm playing pickup basketball. I want this guy on my team because he just comes across as sort of a natural. He has some instincts. Aller strikes me as the opposite on the instincts, although I do think that he did make some improvements in terms of recognizing sort of the pocket presence and being elusive enough to sort of take advantage of some things with a lot of defenses just sort of running out of the way. People keep comparing him to Josh Allen. I don't know what the 40 times are. I'd be surprised if Josh Allen's not a half a second faster than Aller just comes across that way on watching the TV. I'm also wondering too, is, you know, we saw Aller take a lot of significant steps forward last year. Can we expect that same kind of level percentage increase this year? You know, is Kotelnicki still the same coach? You know, I don't think he's necessarily going to get worse, but like, how much better is he really going to get? And that was sort of, we were always led in more recent times where there's Morelli, oh, first year, okay, he's going to be much better second year. He wasn't. Sort of the same thing with Hackenberg. You know, it was like, okay, this is his third year. Now he's going to really realize all this potential. And he didn't. So, you know, I'm not saying Aller's going to one way or the other. I'm just sort of reiterating the fact that, you know, we don't know. These are things that I think we need to watch as we start following the offseason. And, you know, I think we also have to probably consider, too, is who's Aller, you know, throwing the ball to in terms of weapons. You know, we talked about all these guys coming back that should be an advantage for a returning cast, but the wide receivers aren't coming back. Now, whether that's addition through subtraction, we'll find out. But, you know, I do empathize with Aller a little bit in terms of, you know, who exactly are you throwing it to?
Yes, that is a big part of it. And I hit on a couple things. One is the ability for Drew Aller to improve. And I've mentioned this previously. We've seen that through his years already. And first example I'll give is in high school. As an underclassman, he was not this very highly rated quarterback that we ended up seeing, you know, the 5-star, very top of his recruiting class. That was not the case, and which is actually good for Penn State, because if he were that good, he might be a Buckeye right now. You know, if he was considered a 5-star quarterback early on in the recruiting phase, Ohio State probably would not have let him get out of the state. But so he showed that great improvement in high school. I think he showed it here at Penn State, again, going from his first year as a starter to his second year. So I feel like he has shown the inclination, the ability to get better, to improve on his weaknesses. I also think it will help that you have Kotelnicki for a second year. He now knows Drew Aller so much better, I'm sure. But it also leads to the question of, you know, the wide receivers, and they've not been good, Steve, okay? Please, the next statement I make, I don't want people to think I believe differently. However, what I wonder, too, is were there times when perhaps he could have gone to the wide receivers, meaning Drew Aller, but chose to go to Tyler Warren because, let's face it, Tyler Warren you feel pretty confident in. If it's a 50-50 ball, you feel Tyler Warren's going to get it. But none of the wide receivers were given that benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I mean, I think Aller, question of confidence. You know, I think he felt confident with going to Warren. I think also times checking down to Singleton. Did that lead to frustration in the wide receiver room? Is that one of the reasons maybe these guys felt they should leave? You know, I'm not sure. I guess with the quarterback position, so much of that is confidence. And that's where just that last game with Notre Dame hanging out there. I mean, to miss that wide open throw to Singleton early in the game, to throw that god-awful interception, you would yell at a seven-year-old for throwing. That's where I sort of look back as to, you can coach this guy all you want, but I don't understand how anybody who has NFL aspirations are going to make throws like that. You can't just be that off. And I think that was sort of the thing that alarmed me is, you know, we just saw dramatic Drew. When he was good, he was great. There were points in that USC game in Oregon where he was just on fire, and you could see why NFL scouts are salivating. And then we saw the playoffs, and the guy could hit a broadside of a barn. And to have that level of contrast and instability, that scares me as a fan, and would have if I was a coach.
And I think that is a question of, you brought up confidence. I think that's a big part of it too. And will that come with more reps? You know, talk to Auburn people about Bo Nix versus Oregon Bo Nix, who had been around for several years and now it seems to be turning into a very good NFL quarterback. Will we now see that, you know, from Drew Aller, just more reps, more playing against these, having these big games? Because right now, yeah, he's got to deal with the same thing James Franklin does. Can you win a big game? And he, even in, if you want to call some of those playoff games big games, Drew Aller did not play well, even in the wins. We'll pick this up, Steve, when we come back for quarter three. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Steve Pavlik. I'm Jim Galante. It's quarter number three of our show. And Steve, we're talking about Drew Aller coming back and some of the struggles he's had in big games. It was pretty obvious that Notre Dame game, he did not play well, did not play well at all. And, you know, no other way to put it, I think that's why they lost the game. He plays a better game, they win the game. And the one guy who probably knows it better than all of us is Drew Aller himself. But I think what we're going to find is him coming back, he's going to have the opportunity to rewrite this narrative. And I keep saying it, they've got Oregon real early in the season next year, Steve. And if you want a chance to erase that, both him and James Franklin, beat Oregon.
Yeah, actually, offensively, that wasn't the problem when Penn State played Oregon. They moved the ball up and down the field on them with ease. I mean, that was probably one of Aller's better games, although he did throw a couple of picks, if I recall. Particularly the first one was pretty bad. But, you know, that also gets into inconsistency about Tom Allen. I mean, the defense coordinator, he's sort of leaving now too. You know, people speculating as to why that may have been. I mean, that was an example of, you know, the defense just basically not showing up. And that, you know, going back to inconsistency, just this dramatic drop off at times of play. I mean, you could say the same thing about Allen. I mean, personally, I thought losing Diaz was a much bigger loss. I thought he was special compared to Tom Allen. So, you know, I don't know that losing him necessarily is going to be that big of a deal. I thought that was a pretty talented defense. I thought at times, going back to Oregon, USC, took that pass defense, they were really underachieving. But I guess going back to Drew Aller, you could say the same thing now about the receiver room. I mean, it wasn't a good room. How much of that was on the players? We talked about them having a lot of the physical attributes. Why weren't they able to sort of realize their potential? You know, was it some concern on the receiver part with Aller? These guys are playing with him. Aller's coming back, and these guys elected to leave. Even Trey Wallace, who was the number one guy. You know, I know some people are saying, well, addition to subtraction, just sort of throw the bums out, you know, get some other guys in. How bad could they be? But my guess is, you know, both Evans and Wallace are going to find some attractive destinations here in the portal. And just what concerns me is I started wondering, you know, Keandre Lambert-Smith left too and went to Auburn after playing with Aller. And I know he said some negative things about that. You could look at Lambert-Smith and say, how did that Auburn move work out for you? But that was another sort of number one receiver that sort of questioned with an NFL quarterback, I'm not getting the ball. And now you see this. And it just makes me wonder, you know, are these receivers who are working with Aller every day at practice concerned that, hey, this guy doesn't have it. He can't get us the ball, or he's too afraid. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that, you know, we can, one of the reasons they left is they just sort of realized that they're going to bring in better players and their spots aren't guaranteed. So if you were a starting receiver, you may actually drop down to number four. I don't know, but I'm just sort of raising the prospect as to, you know, do these guys know something that I don't know that we don't, or going back to this conversation about Aller, asset or liability.
Well, I look at it a little different with the wide receivers, those two. And my initial impression, I've always been a big Trey Wallace fan. I think he has a lot of physical tools there. And it's not like he had an awful season. If you look at the numbers, what's interesting is they're bringing in the receiver from USC. Well, guess what? Trey Wallace has better numbers than him, if you're just going to go by that. Go ahead.
But Wallace was the number one receiver here. I assume the guy from USC was not the number one receiver there.
Well, he no, I don't think he was. But I think they had a room full of, I'll say, equals, or, you know, it was distributed among different players. But I also, I think a couple things. In you brought up Tom Allen, and I'm with you, and everybody knows I'm a huge Manny Diaz fan. And yes, I didn't like losing him. I would have liked to have him back again. And I was never in this season said, oh, look, there's Tom Allen's handiwork, like I did with Manny Diaz. So our colleague Andy Shea, we were talking about this guy's leaving, and it's his the way he put it, I think, was, I don't think Penn State kicked Tom Allen out the door, but they held the door open for him. They apparently, you know, or it appears they made no effort to retain him. Now, I want to switch that to the wide receivers, and I kind of get that same impression. It wasn't like the team was showing them out the door, Omari Evans and Trey Wallace, but I don't know if they made every effort to bring them back. And I'm wondering if it's also one of these just fresh start kind of thing. You brought up Lambert-Smith. I really got the impression that was the case with that one. Both he needed to be away from the team needed him, you know, to get a fresh start also. And it almost feels like they're looking at wide receiver and saying, you know what, maybe we just need to start from scratch here.
Maybe, and I hope that's right, but why do we have to keep having these fresh starts here? I mean, you're not really seeing that a lot of the big-time programs. I mean, is that Marcus Hagans, the wide receiver coach? Is there some broader thing? I mean, wide receiver used to be a point of strength for Penn State. I mean, you had, under Franklin, you had Chris Godwin, you had KJ Hamler, Jahan Dotson. I mean, now you sort of sit there these last few years and you really sort of struggle to see, how did things get so bad so fast? And Franklin has done a good job, you know, using limited portal additions, guys that really fit culturally, but also can make contributions. The one position where he's failed to do that has been wide receiver. You haven't seen any of these wide receivers that he's gone out and got really come in and make big contributions. That's sort of, you know, you're talking about expectations for next season. I mean, yes, a lot of these guys are coming back. However, the absence of the passing game, you can't feel good about things improving. You have the guy coming back, throwing the ball. We talked about asset liability, just that question. And then there's still, now this remains this question, who is he throwing it to? You got some of these guys out. It's not clear the guys coming in are going to be any better. And while Aller should benefit from another year with Kotelnicki, more familiarity with his offense and play calling and scheming and the like, these wide receivers, it's brand new to them. So they're going to have to get on the same page as Aller. So I don't know that there's going to be necessarily a quick fix here. I hope I'm wrong. You know, I hope, you know, we talked about how to allocate some of this NIL money. that the resources are needed to try to bring in some of these receivers. I just wonder what the word out in the street is. You know, is it, hey, your receiver, these guys are all leaving Penn State, they're not getting developed, and or, yeah, they have this guy Aller here with this NFL arm, but he struggles to deliver it to you, so maybe you're better off going somewhere else. I don't know, but that's sort of my fear.
There is an issue, there's no doubt. And, you know, it's, we're talking about it because we have to, and that is the weak area. But it is interesting to watch how position by position, running back, we're just seeing that constantly good ones keep coming in. They're developed, works. Probably the best position, tight end, is the best example. Just one after another. They're lined up, Steve, for the next several years. I mean, you know, we have Luke Reynolds as a true freshman showing a lot of skill. And like I keep mentioning, it seems like everybody forgets about Andrew Rapelier, who was out hurt this year. And, oh, by the way, they just brought in another freshman, Olish, who's supposed to be very good. So we've stopped worrying about tight end. Remember just a couple of years ago, our concern was the offensive line?
Yeah. No, it was a question mark heading this year. And I was very pleasantly surprised with how well the offensive line played, particularly against Notre Dame, because that is a pretty stout run defense up there. So for them to be able to have a dominating run game against a defensive front like that, to me, that's impressive. And the fact that some of these guys are coming back next year gives me a lot of optimism. Now, hopefully, you know, they stay healthy through the offseason and into next season to sort of realize a lot of this potential. But yeah, I think under Phil Troutwine, that group has made big strides and feel optimistic about where things are headed. But again, the glaring example goes back to wide receiver is how can you let this be? I mean, the constant change in the wide receiver position coach doesn't help. But I mean, really, you just have to wonder now where.
Let me ask you a question, Steve, about that. Where does the responsibility lie? Is it at the position coach? Is it the offensive coordinator? You know, we see this offensive coordinator and things seem to be working really well at tight end or with running back, with offensive line. So could it be on him? How much of the development of wide receivers is on a position coach?
I think at this point, it's a fair amount, because we've seen a lack of development the past two coordinators. And then you get back to defense of the coordinators. They're not bringing in many of their assistants. I mean, Franklin has a pretty stable group of assistant coaches, and so these coordinators come in, and for whatever reason, it's not working in terms of realizing the benefit here. It was that way with Yurcich. It's that way now with Kotelnicki. I think for some cases, it works out to the benefit on the defense. You know, you had Manny Diaz, Tom Allen. Most of the defensive positions didn't really change. You have a lot of guys, you know, developing there. But, you know, a new coordinator comes in with personality, style, approach. That's going to be, I guess, some uncertainty there. But the one constant is a lack of development at wide receiver. And again, Franklin's tried different position coaches. He's moved guys around. This has to be something I know that he's aware of. But identifying the problem is one thing. Solving it's another. And I don't know that at this point, Franklin's identified what that solution is going to be.
Well, the one good thing you mentioned earlier, if it's going to succeed this year, it's going to be with either young players coming in or transfer portal guys who are going to come in and have their, it'll be their first year in the system. But I think the one thing that's, you know, if you want to be optimistic, is wide receiver is a position someone could come in and excel right away. We saw a pretty good freshman at Ohio State excel.
We did, but then you go back to who were the guys on Penn State's roster, and would they have been the sixth or seventh receiver at Ohio State? I mean, you know, but you're right. I mean, in terms of, you know, identifying a quick fix, wide receiver is probably the easiest position to do that on offense. But, you know, there are a lot of other teams out there looking for wide receivers too. There's a lot of other money out there to try to lure these guys. So that goes back to, you know, the reputation. You would think a wide receiver would want to play for a guy like Aller with an arm. And that's where I just sort of wonder what's sort of the word on the street there. And then they want to get developed too. I know we talked about, you know, the NIL money making it attractive to stay in college a little longer, but your ultimate goal is still to make it to the NFL. And you want to be developed. And if my son were a wide receiver, I'd have serious pause to recommend saying, hey, you really want to go to Penn State, just what have they produced recently? It's not encouraging.
But the flip side is you wonder, is this an opportunity for a good wide receiver? Because they haven't had that yet. All right, that's it for quarter number three. One more quarter to go. Stick with us. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hall Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Steve, I'm Jim. It's quarter number four of our show. And Steve, we've been talking about, unfortunately, wide receiver position. And I asked you the question about where the responsibility lies. You know, is it the talent coming in? Is it the position coach, the coordinator, the recruiting? And sometimes these things just don't work. That seems to be the one position that's not working. And it's interesting to me because tight end is working so well. And as much as it's, I know there's a different position coach and all that, but the tight ends do a lot of the same thing that the wide receivers do, okay? They run routes, they block downfield, they catch passes, they try to get themselves open, and it seems like year after year, this Penn State team is able to do that well at the, from the tight end position. I think the end result might be, well, if you got a bunch of good running backs and a bunch of good tight ends and not a bunch of good wide receivers, we're going to see a lot of multiple tight ends and a lot of multiple running back sets.
Reminds me back when, I guess, Bill O'Brien was here. We used to see a little bit more of that. Spreading tight ends out, creating some mismatches. I mean, you should play to your strengths and your personnel. But you know, I think at this point, the playbook's sort of out on Penn State. You're going to sit there, you're going to put eight guys in the box playing against them, and you're going to dare Allard to beat you with some of these wide receivers that, you know, and Notre Dame's case, that seemed to be an effective strategy. And I think that's sort of the blueprint heading into the season. Now, that should open things up for a wide receiver, because if you're going to have single coverage, you know, you don't have to be necessarily the best guy to get a step on your opponent. And Aller should be able to get the ball to them. So, you know, there's pros and cons here. Again, one of the great things about football is it's like chess. There's a counter move to everything out there. And you know, I just hope, in terms of realizing these expectations for next year, to run it back, as sort of the kids say in college, you know, you really need to address that wide receiver deficiency if we're hoping to ultimately make it to the championship game.
Yeah, there's no doubt they have to. They really shouldn't be done with the wide receiver room, despite bringing in a couple of portal players. But the fact still remains is you're going to return, you know, two really good running backs. Even without Tyler Warren, I feel real comfortable with the tight end position. I think the offensive line is going to be really good. Let's look at the other side of the ball a little bit. And it sounds like you and I are on the same page with Tom Allen. Not to rip him, not to shred him, but feels very replaceable, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, my critique of him, you know, I mentioned USC, Oregon, Bowling Green, it was just really slow to make adjustments. And I thought that was really magnified in that Notre Dame game, third quarter, just really slow when Notre Dame was just running the ball down their throat to make an adjustment. And then Colby King, you know, you saw the Notre Dame coaches making adjustments and sort of targeting King in the passing game. I might have been wondering, King didn't thank Allen when he declared for the NFL. But to me, he just comes across as a guy, you know, the NFL model, Jag, just a guy. I think they could probably find somebody to replace him. I think if they go even in-house, that they probably wouldn't lose much. Although my fear is, you know, there's a lot of, now going back to these expectations for next season. And I think if Franklin were to settle on an internal hire, does that sort of convey that, you know, we weren't able to get the splashing, you know, replacement in there, the defensive coordinator? You know, and I wonder too, you know, people talked about, you know, could Penn State get Notre Dame's Al Golden to come back? Does Franklin feel threatened by Golden having him on the staff? I don't know, because I could see if things start to go well on the defensive front, poorly on the offense, people start looking at Golden as a potential replacement for Franklin as the buyout comes down. Would Franklin be confident bringing some guy like Pat Fitzgerald coming in too? Where then the question becomes, well, why isn't this guy the head coach? So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if Franklin sort of viewing some of these candidates through this lens. I don't want to be hiring my successor. But, you know, we'll see. I think he does take time to think about, you know, the candidates and evaluate them. And if this NIL money is any suggestion, I think the resources are going to be there to hopefully bring in somebody good. But I just wonder about those psychological considerations as well.
I don't think Franklin will concern himself with that, because he's already shown, you know, he brought in Manny Diaz, a former head coach. And go ahead.
Oh, I would just say with that, the buyout was what it was. And I think Diaz wasn't looking at Penn State as a destination job necessarily when he first took over. I think it was, hey, I'm doing this for a couple of years to try to get another chance at a head coaching gig. And that's essentially what he did when Duke came open.
Well, I just feel like Franklin's looking at it now with who could help me win the most. And if I don't think Al Golden would come back as defensive coordinator. It's, first of all, it's a lateral move. You know, he's got a pretty good gig at Notre Dame, and we don't know if Marcus Freeman, you know, there's talk of him going to the Bears, what effect that has on all of it. But
what's Franklin's reputation as somebody to work with or work for? I mean, you know, you've had some coordinators leave, and look, I know sometimes it's an opportunity, but it's like any other business, you know, personalities clash. In defense of Allen, you know, if he thought things were really going swimmingly with Franklin, maybe he doesn't make that move either. Obviously, we know what how it ended with Mike Yurcich. They didn't get along. So I just mentioned that too, is we talked about the word on the street with Allen. What's the word on the street working for Franklin? Does that influence the type of candidates that want to come to Penn State? I don't know. I'm just asking the question.
I think, you know, bringing up Yurcich, Shiraka, you know, the various wide receiver coaches that he let go. But I don't think the turnover at Penn State in comparison, I mean, this is a volatile job where guys are moving all the time. And if you look at the number of coaches that, you know, Poindexter's now been around for a few years, and he probably had some opportunities to move. Juwan Sider at running back, Terry Smith, you know, being promoted from within, Deion Barnes, Ty Howe. I think, you know, he was able to draw Troutwine in, and Troutwine's now been there for several years. And you add to it, especially at a defensive coordinator, you know, Brent Pry was around for quite a while. And then got a pretty good job as head coach at Virginia Tech. Manny Diaz, you know, spent 2 years here and parlayed that into a head job. I would imagine Manny Diaz would say he had a very good experience here. So I think James Franklin probably has a pretty good reputation based on, you know, the numbers of guys who've stuck around. And candidly, I also think, Steve, overall, his assistant staff is pretty good. You know, just the names that I mentioned, you know, Sider and Troutwine and Poindexter and Terry Smith, I think they all have a great reputation and they choose to stick around.
Yeah. I mean, again, are the coordinators the one really interacting directly with Franklin more, particularly on the scheming and making the adjustments, which are usually the areas where you find criticism with Franklin in game? That's sort of where that lies. And how attractive is it to come in knowing that you can't really bring in your assistants? Sort of like you can come in for this job, but you're going to inherit this coaching team. You might want to put some of your own people and spin in there. You know, I'm just raising the question. I don't know. But I do think one of the things that would be attractive for a defensive coordinator is just the amount of talent that's coming back to know that, hey, I'm going to come here and I'm going to have some really top talent where I should be able to excel. I think the corners left, which honestly, I put them probably right behind the wide receivers. I'm not sure there's any big loss there. You know, going back to whether it was the Notre Dame game, passing defense all year, I thought was average at best. And by that, I really put a lot of the blame there on the corners and Allen too. So I'm hoping that that's an opportunity for improvement in terms of, you know, a new coordinator, new approach. Would like to see improved tackling at the second level. So, but again, I think just the fact that, you know, you're going to inherit a really talented roster for somebody that wants to get some immediate results, you know, should be attractive.
I do too. I think it's a good job with a lot of talent. Now, you mentioned some of the big names that came back, Denai Dennis, Sutton, Zane Durant. Those were huge that they are returning. Mm-hmm. The one you mentioned, Kobe King. Now, he got burned a few times in the Notre Dame game, but he was put in a tough situation. I don't blame him. He was covering a guy that he should not be covering one-on-one without any help over the top or so on. But with that said, I thought losing Kobe King was a big loss for the team because I felt like he was their best run stuffing, good tackling linebacker.
Yeah, I was a little torn on King leaving. I agree. I wouldn't really put the fault on him. The fault was on Tom Allen for not addressing that shortcoming that Notre Dame kept going back to repeatedly. But for King, at this point, he's probably peaked in terms of his physical play. So I sort of get the argument as to like, hey, go to the NFL now. Why do you think your draft stock is going to improve necessarily next year? But like, you're playing on a championship team, you have a big run, there's a case maybe you can bump up a round or two. But that said, you know, I don't really see him being a top pick, going back to why not take the guaranteed money. I mean, he should know this better than anybody because his brother went out too early as corner. So that one surprised me a little bit. If he didn't like Tom Allen, which again, you can read into the statement whatever you want, didn't seem like there was any love lost there. The fact that Allen was leaving, I thought might even make King more likely to come back. So, you know, that was one that, you know, I guess I could sort of see either side of the coin.
I will never question players who make the decision that's in their own best interest. And obviously he felt that way. But as someone following Penn State, that was one of the players who left that I thought was a loss for the team that, you know, I mentioned. I don't think the staff or James Franklin made this great effort to keep Tom Allen around. I got the same feeling about any of the receivers that left, that there was no great concerted effort. Kobe King, though, is one I would have made an effort to try to get back.
What did you think about the corners leaving? Do you think they made any effort to bring them back?
I'm kind of with you on this one. It didn't bother me, the guys that left. I think having AJ Harris back is a good thing. I think he's talented. I'm looking at someone's projected starting lineup and they have Elliot Washington as the other starting cornerback. I think it was great with the safeties that Key Wheatley coming back. And it was interesting having King Mack return.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm with you. I thought the corners were average at best. I don't see any real loss there. And I think there's a potential here for some addition through subtraction, maybe an attractive potential portal pickup as well. But yeah, I think that coordinator hire, I think, is going to be really important because that pass defense really left a lot to be desired last year.
All right, that's going to be the final word. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.